Welcome to Winning STL, where we have conversations about how St. Louis can best compete and win in the battle for talent, jobs, growth, and equity. Winning STL is presented by Purina, who creates richer lives for pets and the people who love them, and has proudly called St. Louis home since 1894. Today we are at Spark St. Louis, a co-working and meeting space located in Ballpark Village. Joining me today is Josh Allen, founder and co-owner of Companion Baking. Josh, thanks so much for joining us.
Super happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So why don't we start with a background of how you got into baking, the food industry, where you are today. Give us the short overview.
Should I start with the Easy Bake Oven when I was four? Honestly, going back to the Easy Bake Oven, I have always had a fascination with baking. I mean, Mom was a baker. She loved doing just home baking. I remember stealing my sister's Easy Bake Oven and, you know, baking a brownie to a light bulb was one of the coolest things. That fascination has always existed. I was went to school in the Bay Area.
Stanford.
Went to Stanford.
You don't have to underplay that. That's pretty good.
I was an American Studies major, so, you know, I can quote Huck Finn, and that was the extent.
Does that come in handy in the kitchen?
I learned how to think. I mean, I was a complete liberal arts guy, and I think college for me was an opportunity. My family had an institutional broadline distribution business here called Allen Foods that they had for 100 years. And so really when I went to school, it was with the assumption that I was always going to come back and work for my family's business. I would have been fourth generation, and it just felt like that's what I was going to do. And so I took the opportunity at Stanford to learn how to think. And so the interdisciplinary American Studies major gave me that opportunity to study law and business and all kinds of different things, anything with America in the title. But coming out of that, I was racing my bicycle as an amateur for fun and racing triathlons. And so I wanted to get a job in the evening in order to be able to ride my bike during the day. Ended up getting a job in a restaurant that led me to getting a job at Whole Foods. And I think the Whole Foods in Palo Alto was like the fifth Whole Foods in the country at the time.
Early days.
And I was working in the basement. Only English-speaking person in the basement of Whole Foods working, you know, 2 a.m. to 10 a.m. and just fell in love with turning flour, water, and salt into something every day and opening that oven door and peeking in and seeing something. And I just couldn't get it out of my head. When I would go home, I would bake at home. In between when I was training and going to work, I got a job with a small grocery store chain out there. At the time, it was called the Oakville Grocery Company that was based in Napa, but the president was swimming with the Stanford Masters, so we were swimming together, and I met him that way, and just kept studying the craft and worked for some different people. And at a certain point, it just felt right to come back home, but it felt right to come back home and open a bakery. And, you know, my family was incredibly supportive. It was still the food industry. My grandfather loaned me the money to buy an oven from France and buy a mixer. And I placed that order and drove across the country in 1993 and painted the walls and tiled the floors of a small space that they had in a building in South City on Gustine Avenue and started baking bread.
So if you look back to where you were then, are you kind of amazed that it worked as well as it has?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was 24, so what you don't know, you don't know, which is probably a blessing, right? Like, I didn't have any idea what I was getting myself into and didn't have a 3-year or 5-year plan. It was just like, I'm going to bake and we're going to see what happens. And I would bake all night and then go try to make sales calls during the day. And knock on wood, there were two gentlemen that ended up being customers, Bill Cardwell and Mr. Bomarito, Vince Bomarito.
Oh, wow.
And really, that's how the business took off. I mean, I always knew that if I could get those two guys to support what I was doing, and they were incredibly supportive of what I was doing, that I could use that story to get into other places and grow the business that way.
And you had to be confident in your product, right? You had to feel good about, I know how to do this.
I knew how to do like five things. I mean, we made like 4 different loaves of bread and a dinner roll. Like, no, I mean, honestly, I probably bit off way more than I could chew early. But that naivete, I think, was what the opportunity was. So ignorance can sometimes be bliss, right? And so I had delivered groceries for my dad for years in high school and through college in the summer. So I always knew where the back door of the restaurants were, and my family's reputation as good business people with integrity helped a tremendous amount to be able to go in and was calling on some customers that he had known for a long time. I mean, he had a great relationship with the Bomarito family from selling groceries. And so It just grew slowly and surely. And my grandfather told me when I opened the business, he said, just shut up and listen to your customers and they'll tell you how to grow your business. And so I took that humble approach and here's the five things I make today. What else do I need to be making? What else do you need? And I remember Bill Cardwell, he bought some sourdough bread for the table. He used it as his table bread. And then he said, hey, I need a hamburger bun for lunch. And so I figured out how to make a hamburger bun. And together we developed that product and added hamburger buns to the mix. And then was selling the Ritz-Carlton something. And they, hey, we need banquet rolls for dinner service for our banquets. Can you make dinner rolls? And we started doing that. And the Hyatt needed pastries. And so we started making pastries. So it was really just from listening and being responsive that not everybody's willing to do or interested in doing. I didn't have any preconceived notion of specifically what I wanted to sell. I didn't have a signature item. I really was in the business of taking care of my customer. And still to this day, we want our customers to tell their story. And if we can help them do that through a product, then we're excited to do it.
So it sounds like your grandfather's words of advice, you've heeded.
Oh, absolutely.
You said, what do you want?
Continue to this day. I mean, it's really, that's the nature of where the growth has come from. We're now, 32 years later, a custom bread manufacturer working with multi-unit operators, so folks that have, you know, 5 or 150 up to 150 units across the country, and we're making things special for them. Kevin Nashen from Sydney Street Cafe and Peacemaker had a very strong vision of what he wanted his Peacemaker sandwich, his poor boy sandwiches to be, and took us like 14 months to develop this bread for him.
Really?
And sitting in the bag, it doesn't look like anything special. But when he does his thing with it and brushes it with oyster butter and puts it on the flat grill and does everything that he does, it turns into the most wonderful sandwich. And so the fact that we're so honored to be able to play some like small, tiny part in that, but he had to sort of coach us through, and he's so good at articulating what he wanted. I mean, it was frustrating at times to not get there as quickly as we could, but those are the relationships and opportunities. I mean, that's, we're really in the relationship business, and people are excited to be able to be invested in the development of their product. You know, it isn't just us going back and tinkering and then coming back. We want them to come into the shop. We want to take them examples and iterations along the way.
Yeah.
His feedback was detailed and it was specific and it challenged us to figure out different ways to do things. And so that's the most enjoyable part of the process. If we can find other people that are as passionate about what they do as we are about what we do, then that marriage together is something really special.
I've always, from a distance, been pleasantly surprised how supportive the restaurant scene is towards each other, towards competing restaurants and other chefs. Everyone seems pretty vested in the collective success.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's a unique St. Louis trait too, right? Like, we want each other to be successful. And you know, in food manufacturing, I'm constantly talking to Dan Abel from Bissinger's Chocolates and Katie Lee with her, especially with the growth of her frozen pizza business. How can I help you? What mixers work for us? Flowers, you know, people, vendors, choices, all of those things. And because it's just so cool for St. Louis to be able to see these folks go out and do these incredible things across the country. And it's easy to be kind and it's easy to be generous. I mean, knock on wood, we're in a position to be able to do it. But nobody wants to see anybody fail in St. Louis. And so I think that's a unique thing about the community that I find to be really, really endearing and fascinating.
Well, and you've had a lot of success. You could probably do this in a lot of places. You choose to stay here. It seems like the place is important to you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it's very unique from that perspective. And now that we're in the wholesale frozen we're selling bread across the country, it's a wonderful place to be from a distribution standpoint.
Sure.
Obviously, the center of the country. But I think it's the Midwestern values and the ability to find really incredibly talented people to work on our team. And again, the vendor community and the support and the restaurateurs. And I have 5 children. It's a wonderful place to raise a family and be a part of. And I mean, you've talk to all of the folks at all of the wonderful institutions and cultural things that we have here. I mean, all that stuff added together makes for a really wonderful place.
So 5 children, successful entrepreneur, runner, podcast, which we'll get into. Do you sleep, Josh?
Not very much, but
drinking black coffee. So Josh, you have a very successful podcast called Baked In. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Tell us about it.
It's on the typical, Apple, Spotify, Amazon. Initially, we interviewed 12 people, kind of put it together to see if one, if I enjoyed it and it was a format that I enjoyed being a part of, and two, if they were conversations that folks might have an interest in. And it seemed to work okay. And it's been, I think, almost 3 years now that we've been rolling with it. But it's, there's nothing more enjoyable to me than that opportunity to sit down, to do a little research about somebody, find out some amazing things that folks are doing. And you're uncovering, as I know you've done the same, you uncover things and people in St. Louis that are just incredible. Most recently, I had the gals from Luso Style on. They're the ones that are doing all of the merchandise for the NFL and the NBA and the Major League Baseball that are women-directed clothing, because I didn't know going into that conversation that, you know, 40%, like almost 40% of fans for all of these sports are women. Wow. There's 80 million female NFL fans. And it was a completely underserved market. We kind of joked that it was like pink it and shrink it. Like that was sort of the mentality to take if you wanted to sell something to a fan. And they've turned that on its head. And
why don't you ask a woman what we might want to wear?
Exactly. You know? And so they've built this incredible business right down the street from where we're recording this, with a design studio and manufacturers all around the world, and just growing this business by leaps and bounds with a really tight focus. And it's incredible to see that. And some of their best customers are the New York Yankees and the LA Dodgers. It's not just selling, you know, yes, they do stuff for St. Louis City.
Yeah.
Yes, they do stuff for the Cardinals.
Right.
But they're doing stuff across the world. And it's so neat to hear that that's happening. And they're so fun and humble and incredulous that it's happening, you know, on the same side. And so that's the piece, that kind of Midwest humility that a lot of folks bring to what they do, which is just so enjoyable to uncover.
You're a St. Louis guy. You went away briefly, but you came back. So you obviously are committed to the city, this region. What do you like about St. Louis? What are we doing well that maybe people don't recognize as much as they should, that we need to keep doing more of?
Well, I think we started to talk about it, but we definitely punch above our weight when it comes to the hospitality and the food scene.
Yeah.
And in a way, and maybe it's because of the easier cost of living and the affordability of St. Louis, we can go out. We can be supportive of folks in St. Louis in a way that maybe other communities don't have the luxury of being able to do. But, you know, if we had more business travel, maybe they would be even blossoming even more. But even the community itself does such a great job of supporting St. Louis. I think that talent brings more talent. There are folks that want to come and they want to work for the great chefs of St. Louis and the great restaurants, and then they want to go out and open their own place and do their own thing, and then they realize that this is a great community in which to do it. I think Gerard Kraft is a great example of that. I mean, he bought his restaurant space, you know, online, had never been to St. Louis before he bought the building to open his restaurant, but what Kevin Nashan was doing attracted him to St. Louis and what he heard about the community. And so I certainly was living in the San Francisco Bay Area. There was no part of me that thought I could open a bakery in San Francisco. Like that didn't even cross my mind. Like there was lot more competition. I was, you know, 15 years behind the movement, whatever it was. It felt very daunting. The cost of that, the insurance, the nature of that, and coming back to the familiarity of St. Louis and what I knew would be an incredibly supportive environment, that was easy. And so many of us have left to learn a craft, to do something, and then have come home to then build a business that way. And I think, and then St. Louis has just embraced those of us who have done that.
Seems like it worked. Josh, when you travel, because you do this now a fair bit, sounds like for your work, or at least occasionally, are there any cities that you've seen something in and you say, oh man, I really like this. St. Louis would benefit from making a version of that or something like that in our town. Is there anything that jumps to mind for you?
You know, that's a really good question. I think some of maybe the density of developments in certain areas. I think we're obviously sitting here in Ballpark Village, and it's a start, right? Like it was an idea. I mean, you see what some folks have been able to do around their stadiums or around their area that's shopping and entertainment, and we have like a little microcosm of it, but not enough of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I always felt that that we could have done more with Soulard Market. Like, I feel like Soulard Market, you know, the oldest farmer's market west of the Mississippi, could have been this incredible, incredible place. And it could have been a national icon. And yet it's not. And we haven't been able to figure that out. And the Tower Grove Farmers Market, those folks are tremendous. Yeah. They built this wonderful thing, but we had why do we have disparate markets when we could have basically created something really special down in Soulard? And I still wish there was. I remember when we first moved back, there was a little bit of movement on that. I remember Kiku Ibata had started to do some design work on it, and there was like a little project. But then there was this thing, well, we don't want to yuppify the farmers market, so it didn't pan out and didn't move forward. And I wish that we could have created something where somebody like me could have put a little bakery inside of it, and we could have had, you know, a Reading Terminal Market like they have in Pennsylvania, or a ferry building like you see in San Francisco inside of Soulard with all of the farmers and with all of that. It could have been a really amazing thing.
Well, anyone listening, reach out to Josh. He's got
ideas, but yeah, I don't have any money, so.
Other than bread you've made yourself, what's the best bite of bread that you've had that you said, oh my God, that's unbelievable, that's amazing?
You know, it's funny, I think we have it in St. Louis. I think what Ted Wilson's doing at Union Loafers is incredible. I think he makes beautiful bread, makes beautiful bagels out of Bagel Union. And like we talked about before, all I want to see is Ted be successful. And I think he makes wonderful stuff. And it's great to see that happening right here.
There's enough bread eaters in this town to cover all of us. Well, I'm one of them. So listen, your food is fantastic. Your story is great. Your commitment to this region is laudable. I just will speak for a lot of our viewers today. We appreciate it and love to have people like you that are flying the flag, as it were, for the place.
Yeah, so it's really fun to help folks tell their story. And I think what you're doing and what I get to do with the podcast, really, it's a unique gift.
Well, thank you so much. We really appreciate it.